All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Oh my God, what day is it? Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today is December 16th, 2025. It's Jobs Day. After many moons and the government shutdown, we finally got some jobs data. The NARM farm payrolls from October and November was released. You may recall we had this little government shutdown thing going on. And so some of our most important economic indicators, the CPI and the NARM farm payrolls, were not released. Well, we got a whole bunch of that this morning, and it was not good. Not good at all. We got the October number, negative 105,000 jobs for the month of October. That's no good. No bueno. No unemployment rate and no labor force participation rate. They didn't do the household survey for the whole month of October because of the shutdown. The establishment survey is a little easier because it's based on report stuff that's reported to the government automatically through the computer. So I guess that's a little bit easier to collect. The November numbers, on top of that, we actually added 64,000 jobs for the month of November. All right, that's softening the blow of the 105,000 we lost in October. Unemployment rate, 4.6%. Now, we didn't get an unemployment rate in October, but back in September, it was 4.4%. Guys, you can go all the way back to June on that chart, and you can see we are rising 0.1% every month. And 0.1%, that's about 160,000 people. So this is not good. The unemployment rate is steadily climbing here. We're now into high unemployment. Inflation is still high. Hey, the stag and the inflation, you Keynesians who tell me you can't have high unemployment and high inflation at the same time. How come they're both still high and how come they're both still rising? It's almost like the Keynesians are full of shit and the Phillips curve doesn't work. Wow. That thing that can't be explained by the Keynesian economic model, probably because the Keynesian economic model is wrong, and yet it's the only thing we teach in academia for some reason. And then we wonder why things keep getting worse, why every situation looks like, well, as long as the government increases spending and the Federal Reserve prints money to accommodate it, the economy should be great. No, it doesn't work. And you can see that reflected in these numbers. Labor force participation rate climbed a little bit here to 62.5%. That is hardship. That's people being unretired back into the workforce because they can't afford to live. Also notable, the U6 unemployment rate. Dreadful spike into U6. Now, a lot of people consider U6 to be a much better measure than the standard unemployment rate, because U6 measure counts people who want to work but can't find work and didn't even try, didn't even look for work. It counts people who are underemployed, like people who are working part-time because they can't find full-time work. It captures a lot of the asterisks and caveats that would drop out of the regular unemployment rate. Well, the U6 unemployment rate over the span of 2 months spiked from 8.0% to 8.7%, a big move higher in that U6. Guys, the job market sucks. Shout out to people like Amanda Goodall, who's been out there, the jobs chicks on Twitter, who's been saying this for months now. Like all this stuff about the resilience of the labor market does not jive with what she sees, and she sees the actual real-time data. Well, we got some of that reflected today. Also important, we've got some downward revisions. August was revised lower by 22,000 from negative 4,000 to negative 26,000. September also revised lower from lower by 11,000 from positive 119,000 to positive 108,000. So all told, we take the big loss in October, the gains in November, and the two downward revisions. We're looking at a net loss of 74,000 people working after these two reports were dumped on us. Lousy economic data. Now, initially, the market went up a little bit, and they're like, oh, yay, you know, my Fed rate cuts. And then they're like, you know what? I'm beginning to think it's not going to be enough, and the markets are moving lower on that news. Also, we're going to go over the full-time, the part-time, the multiple job holders, some of those nuances. We'll go through that data as well. Not very encouraging there either. Now, we've got some other stories going on this morning. Ford took a $19.5 billion hit from electric vehicles. They're expecting to report most of that in their next quarter. Oh, but the good news, their adjusted earnings aren't affected. Why are their adjusted earnings aren't affected? Maybe that's because they're adjusted. They're like, oh yeah, you know, we lost $20 billion on a stupid foray into electric vehicles because, you know, we figured we would make these giant pig three-row SUVs and then make them all electric, you know, for the planet. And lo and behold, people don't want to buy them. As a matter of fact, that's exactly what CEO Farley said. He said they just weren't selling. A shocking turn of events, I know. But, you know, we're just going to go ahead and adjust the earnings because that $20 billion loss doesn't count. And the good news is our adjusted earnings won't be affected. You see how we see what we did there? Like, oh, yeah, honey, I lost $1 million in Vegas gambling. But the good news is our adjusted income is totally unaffected by that $1 million loss at the poker table in Vegas. Yeah, it's actually really a blessing when you think about it. What else we got? Coincidentally, the European Union is abandoning their combustion engine ban. We're starting to see a lot of these silly EV mandates are being walked back. Why? Because people don't want electric vehicles. The technology is getting better fast, but it's still not there yet. And the power grids can't handle it, especially not when we're building these stupid data centers everywhere. And you still can't get a power plant built, not without the NIMBYs coming out of the woodwork. And so we're starting to walk back some of those EV mandates in Europe. Hey, California. Looking at you, we know this 2030 thing isn't happening. Oh, we wouldn't want to interfere with Gavin's run for president. I forgot. Okay, we'll wait until 2030 gets a little closer, and then we'll do that. What else we got going on? The New York utility says the queue for large power users to connect to the grid in New York has tripled from a year ago because everyone and their brother wants to build a data center. But remember, try to get a power plant built in New York. I double dog dare you. It's going to be hilarious. The pink hair committee chair will come out of the woodwork and they'll be throwing cow dung at you at public meetings. For some reason, we can build these stupid data centers, but we can't build power plants. I don't get it. I really don't get it. But it means higher power prices coming in New York. Also, we've got the PJM capacity auction is coming up tomorrow. We probably won't hear about that until Thursday morning on the live stream. But that is very important. That's going to give us insight into how much those power prices will continue rising into the future. The last time we had that PJM capacity auction, the price for the whole freaking region, by the way, PJM stands for Penn, Jersey, Maryland, but it goes as far south as Virginia and as far west as Illinois. It's the biggest power grid in the country. The last time they had their capacity auction, the entire region increased by the maximum allowed by law. So that's fun. More higher electricity bills. More higher? Yeah, I ain't got no good English this morning. So sue me. What else we got? OpenAI and Disney. We got some deals about that deal that they cut for Sora and Disney putting out AI slop on Disney Plus. Shocker, no cash changing hands. So OpenAI still doesn't have any money. That's fun. President Trump gave us a little bit of insight into what's going to happen with cannabis yesterday. And the cannabis stocks didn't like it. We had a rumor late last week that President Trump was going to reschedule cannabis as a Schedule 3 drug, which is basically federal decriminalization. We didn't get it yet. He didn't call it fake news, but the news that we got wasn't enough. Cannabis stocks sold off a little bit yesterday, but still sharply higher than they were before this rumor started going. India's central bank, I can't tell you what the hell they're doing over there, but there's this story from the Reserve Bank of India going on this morning. We're going to try to sort through it and figure out what the hell they're doing. All I know is the Indian rupee is in free fall, and they are both trying to support the rupee by buying dollars and doing these Forex capacity or Forex swaps. And then at the same time, they're like, oh, well, now we're running short of rupees somehow, and so we're going to inject some rupees into the market at the same time. When you start messing with things, you end up having to mess with both sides of the scale, and now nobody knows what's what. Central banks, you got to love them. We got a warning from the Financial Stability Board at the International Monetary Fund about shadow banks. Basically, shadow banks, private credit, it's so big, they don't even know how big it is because they can't even see into the data. They can't see what they're doing. I'm sure that's going to end really well for everybody. And German insurers now have 40% of their bond holdings in illiquid, unlisted notes. In other words, private credit. 40% of their bond holdings at insurance companies. Keep in mind, guys, insurance companies are supposed to be these ultra-conservative financial institutions that are almost banks, not quite banks. 40% of their bond holdings in this slop? Good God, what is going on in the financial world with this private credit? They're using it to hide the losses from everything from commercial real estate to private equity, to Chinese real estate. Sooner or later, guys, you can't hide it forever. Sooner or later, somebody's going to open the closet and all that crap is going to come falling out. Well, we got a lot to talk about today. So why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button. And you new guys, hit that subscribe button right next to it so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this every single day. And right now, the S&P 500 is lower by about 10 points or 0.15%. The algorithms are still digesting this jobs data. And we had a little green shoot right there. Initially, everybody was like, my Fed rate cuts. And then everybody's like, oh, I just realized that report means the economy sucks. And they started selling a little bit. Stocks holding up pretty well, considering how bad that data was. Meanwhile, the Dow is lower by 25 points or 0.05% in the red. And the NASDAQ is also lower, this one by about a third of a percent, 80 points lower for the tech-heavy NASDAQ. U.S. dollar is a little bit weaker this morning, off by 20 basis points. Certainly, that bad jobs data means the Fed's probably going to go burr a little bit sooner than expected. Although, they're already going burr, so I guess maybe they'll go burr-er. I don't know what they're going to do. They're already printing money, so probably just going to print more. Looking over at the bond market, we've got a little bit of green and a little bit of red. 30-year yields a little bit higher here, 4.860, higher by almost one basis point. The 10-year yield at 4.186, higher by a half a point here. That's interesting to see the 10-year a little bit higher here, considering that jobs data. You'd think there'd be a little bit of bond buying, but there ain't. The 2-year, 3.491, that's up by or down by almost 2 points, excuse me. The 1 month is at 3.673. off by about a half a point. Not a lot of movement in bonds this morning, despite this important data coming out. Looking over at metals, we have got gold is up and silver is down. Spot gold, $43.20. That's higher by almost $15, about a third of a percent higher. February gold futures also higher at $43.50 here, up by about $15.30. Now about $14.70, third of a percent higher for gold. Spot silver, meanwhile, is in the red here, off by about 54 cents after having a really good day yesterday. 63.55 for spot silver. That's lower by 0.85%. March silver futures on the COMEX are basically unchanged here. 63.51, off by about 7 cents or 0.12%. But I still like the shiny, guys. Copper is lower by about 0.9%. Platinum is higher, almost 2%. Palladium is higher by 1.25%. Crude oil, the big loser this morning. Look at the move lower in oil. $1.30 per barrel lower, off by 2.3%. $55.39 for February WTI crude futures. Again, people looking at that jobs data and saying weak economic activity, and oil is reflecting that. Bitcoin had a rough day yesterday, and we're kind of unchanged today. There's been a little bit of volatility. We're about 86,935. We're off by a couple of thousand where we were this time yesterday. Bitcoin sold off at the open pretty hard yesterday, continued for a couple of hours, and then it's been trading sideways ever since, $86,933. All right, let's talk payrolls. Let's talk jobs data. U.S. job growth totaled 64,000 added for the month of November, compared with a 105,000 loss in October and market expectations of a 50,000 increase. Employment rose in healthcare and construction in November. We'll talk a little bit about those sectors and what I think that's telling us, while the federal government continued to lose jobs. The change in total non-farm payroll employment for August was revised down by 22,000, and the change for September was revised down by 11,000. So here's your non-farm payrolls, guys. Again, slight changes to August. Let's refresh this because the chart... Okay, there we go. Now the chart is accurate, showing 26,000 lost in August, 108,000 gained in September, big drop of 105 in October, and an addition of 64 in November. Guys, this is not looking good here. These are not good numbers. We need to add about 100,000 a month just to keep up with population growth. So this is the unemployment rate rising here. And you can see it here. This does not look good here. You'll notice the October is missing here. But we're at 4.6% for November and 4.4% from September. So a reasonable man might interpolate that October would have fallen right around 4.5%. And you'll notice that trend continues all the way back till June. We have been rising by 0.1% every month since June here, steadily rising unemployment rate. You know, Powell can come up and talk about the resiliency of the labor market all he wants. I mean, he didn't really start admitting the labor market was anything but resilient until about 2 months ago. It's been weak this whole time. And again, you know, just these numbers, this unemployment rate is not accurate because this doesn't reflect things like the loss of full-time jobs being offset by the gain of part-time jobs, people working multiple jobs. We'll get to that in a second. That data is dreadful as well. Now, this is the really bad one here, the U6 unemployment rate. U6 counts people who are working part-time because they can't find full-time work. It counts people who didn't look for a job but still want a job, you know, the dejected, if you will, the people who are giving up. Big step change in U6 unemployment rate to 8.7%. That is a scary increase right there from 8.0 in September. And once again, no data for October. And last but not least, looking at the participation rate, 62.5, no data for October, up from 62.4 in September. I look at this chart, seeing this slowly rise. That is people being unretired, in my opinion, people who are coming back into the labor force because they don't have any choice. Their retirement no longer covers the cost of living. All right, now we got some granularity here. This is some this is taken directly from the BLS jobs report here, the establishment survey for November. Healthcare added 46,000 jobs, in line with the monthly gain of 39,000 over the prior 12 months. Ambulatory healthcare services, hospitals, nursing, and health residential facilities. Healthcare has been the one sector that consistently adds five-digit jobs every month, and this is not really reflective of economic prosperity, guys. This is just the aging population. The boomers use a lot more healthcare services, and there's a lot of them. And so there are still jobs being gained in healthcare. Not really a sign of a booming economy. Take away healthcare, and there's no job growth at all. Now, construction employment, that's interesting. It grew by 28,000 in November as non-residential specialty trade contractors added 19,000 jobs. Construction employment had changed little over the prior 12 months. That is your data centers right there, guys. Non-residential specialty trade contractors. That's your electricians. That's your computer service, whatever, guys. The HVAC contractors for big commercial jobs at these data centers. That, again, not really symbolic of economic prosperity because it's all fake, because it's a bubble. So those jobs aren't going to be there much longer. This bubble, the days are numbered. In my opinion, the bubble is already bursting in progress. I think we'll find that silly Oracle report from back in September when they started drawing all this attention to remaining performance obligations, that marked the top. And so I don't think those jobs are really that good either. You've got employment and social assistance continued up 18,000, primarily individual and family services. Social workers, not a real sign of economic prosperity either. Meanwhile, you've got employment edged down in transportation and warehousing, reflecting job loss in couriers and messengers. Right there, shout out to Craig Fuller from FreightWaves. We talked about that yesterday in our interview about the compliance crackdown that we're seeing in the trucking industry and these CDL mills that were giving commercial driver's licenses to freaking anybody with no training and no auditing whatsoever. Like, yeah, sure. Go drive an 18-wheeler full of 50,000 tons of hazmat. How hard could it be? Turns out it's really hard. So the job losses in couriers, I think, probably reflects that compliance crackdown that Craig Fuller talked about. Transportation warehousing also declined by 78,000. You know, the real economy, it sucks. Federal government employment continued to decrease by 6,000 in November. This follows a sharp decline of 162,000 in October, as some federal employees who accepted a deferred resignation offer came off of federal payrolls. Federal government employment is down by 271,000 since reaching a peak in January. So we got a little bit of the DOGE there. They actually did cut federal jobs with DOGE. People taking the buyouts, and their severance is now dropped off. They're no longer counted. If somebody is collecting severance from a job they quit months ago, they wouldn't have shown up on the unemployment rolls until this month. So you got a big drop in government jobs as well. So that's the sectors that are hiring and firing. Now, the other thing to keep in mind is what kind of jobs do we have here? In table A9 in the unemployment or the non-farm payrolls report. This is one of my favorite data sets to look at every month because it's indicative of the real health of the economy, in particular, all the way down here, full-time or part-time jobs. Now, in this most recent month for November, we've got 134,170,000 full-time workers. These numbers are in thousands here. And that's versus 135,153,000 that were reported back in September. Again, no report for October. So guys, we had a loss of 983,000 full-time workers over the prior 2 months. That's good jobs with benefits and paid time off. Almost a million of them went away. Partially offset or more than offset by a gain of part-time workers. 1,025,000 more part-time workers. You see in the pattern here, we lose full-time jobs, we gain part-time jobs. You're no longer an accountant or a software engineer. Now you're a barista at Starbucks. Oh, but you're still employed. You still look the same on the payrolls number. Job gained is a job gained, right? But what does it really mean for the health of the consumer, for the health of the economy? And another one of my numbers that I really like is multiple job holders. And this is not good either. Up by 499,000 versus 2 months ago from 8.8 million to 9.3 million. All right, that is people having to work a second job, probably two part-time jobs, in order to make the same ends meet that they used to do with a single full-time job. This is desperate people doing whatever they have to do to make ends meet. It's a sign of resilience, and it's admirable. Anybody that's out there doing that, my hat's off to you. But at the same time, people shouldn't have to do that, right? And the reason why they have to do that is because the Fed and their stupid money printing causing the inflation, making life too expensive. And now people have to work two jobs. They're away from the kids. They're not there to say goodnight. They're not there to help with homework or see Little League games. Instead, they're at Starbucks working their other job just to afford the house. Or maybe they're out driving the Uber because self-employed unincorporated, that also rose by 526,000 from 9.7 million to 10.2 million. People getting gig work on the side in order to make ends meet. These numbers, this jobs report was absolutely dreadful. Again, this was 2 months of numbers. So, you know, all these jumps of a million or 500,000, you can cut them in half. That was the average monthly jump over the last two. But really, really bad data here. This is not going to help things at all. But I'm sure it's the best economy ever. The golden age of America. Accordion hands. Terrible, terrible. Very terrible. Ford to record a $19.5 billion in special charges related to EV pullback. Yikes, that's not good. I told you EVs was a bubble, right? Didn't I say it 2 years ago, EVs was a bubble? Well, here you go. Ford Motor expects to record about $19.5 billion in special items related to a restructuring of its business priorities and a pullback in its all-electric vehicle investments, the company announced on Monday. The Detroit automaker said most of those charges will occur during the fourth quarter. That'll follow by a $5.5 billion in cash to be charged through 2027. And the majority of that chunk will be paid next year, Ford says. The charge will impact the automaker's net results, but not its adjusted earnings. Yes, we adjusted it away. That is one hell of an adjustment. The automaker said Monday it was increasing its guidance of adjusted earnings before interest and taxes to about $7 billion. That's in line with the target from a year earlier, and before the company had lowered their expectations between $6 and $6.5 billion. So yeah, as long as you overlook the whole $20 billion we lost on electric vehicles, we're actually looking like we're going to grow the company. It's amazing what passes here. I just love it. So what's going on here? This is a pretty powerful quote from the CEO here. The last couple of months have been really clear to us, Farley told CNBC's Phil LeBeau. The very high-end electric vehicles, the $50,000, $70,000, $80,000 vehicles, they just weren't selling. People didn't want them, guys. People don't want an $80,000 three-row electric SUV because it's stupid. Technically, scientifically speaking, it's freaking stupid. Ford stock didn't really care, though. Amazing thing. They must really be focusing on that whole adjustment thing because Ford's was down 11 cents yesterday. It's up 6 cents this morning. Barely any budging in Ford shares on this news. Now, we did see a sizable move in some of Ford's South Korean contractors, people who make like battery technology. Their stocks were down a couple of a percent, but Ford really shrugging this one off. Man, that adjusted earnings, that'll get you every time, won't it? Also, the EU will abandon their combustion engine ban in a win for car makers. Again, people really don't want these things, no matter how much the government tries to shove them down their throat. The European Union is set to propose softening emissions rules for new cars, scrapping an effective ban on combustion engines following months of pressure from the automotive industry. The proposal will allow car makers to slow the rollout of electric vehicles in Europe and aligns the region more closely with the U.S., where President Trump is tearing up efficiency standards for cars put in place by the previous administration. Globally, automakers are struggling to make the shift to profitable. Struggling to make the shift profitable, with Ford announcing a $19.5 billion in charges tied to a sweeping overhaul of its EV business. It's not a sweeping overhaul of their EV business. They're shutting it the heck down. Okay, yeah, it was slight modification, a sweeping overhaul. Nope, it's gone. The European setback to be unveiled Tuesday follows a global pullback from green policies as economic realities of major transformation set in. Mounting trade tensions with the U.S. and China are pushing Europe to further prioritize shoring up its own industry. Although the bloc is legally bound to reach climate neutrality by 2050, governments and companies are intensifying calls for more flexibility, warning that rigid targets could jeopardize economic stability. Under the new proposal, the European Commission will lower the requirements that would have halted sales of new gasoline and diesel-fueled cars starting in 2035, instead allowing a number of plug-in hybrids and electric vehicles with fuel-powered range extenders, according to people with knowledge of the matter. So it's unclear here exactly how much of an ICE ban is still in place. They're kind of suggesting, all right, we're still going to allow hybrids, but nothing about like purely internal combustion vehicles if they're going to be allowed after 2035. But you can see they're already starting to walk these things back. They're probably going to walk them back further because people just don't want this stuff. Meanwhile, New York Utility says the queue for large power users has tripled. Get ready for higher power rates in the Empire State. The queue for power-intensive customers looking to tap into New York's energy grid has surged as the boom for artificial intelligence and growth in large-scale manufacturing drive electricity demand, according to one of the state's utility providers. The subsidiary of National Grid that serves parts of New York City, Long Island, and upstate New York has seen so-called large load connection requests over the next 5 years jump to 10 gigawatts, said National Grid New York President Sally Librera, citing estimates from the New York Independent System Operator. The figure has tripled in just 1 year, she said. Companies with big power needs are drawn to New York, Librera said in an interview with Bloomberg. The state has attracted demand from data center developers and computer chip and part manufacturers while simultaneously not letting anybody build new power plants. The surge in demand has created a balancing act for the providers as it invests to improve aging infrastructure to increase reliability while also addressing cost issues in the state. The power needs of AI are rapidly driving up electricity bills throughout the U.S. Some parts of the New York grid are close to 100 years old, which will require renewable energy, natural gas, and nuclear to modernize, Librera said. Now is one of those moments where customers are seeing increases on their bills, Librera said. Primarily, it's to be investing in infrastructure that is necessary. Guys, that new power is not coming. I don't know. Maybe there's a couple of gas turbines are going up here or there, but you can't get anything done in New York these days. I don't know how they're building these data centers, but get ready for higher electric bills because they are clearly coming. Also, we got some clarity on OpenAI's deal to license Disney characters. It's entirely in stock. That's the story right there, right? We heard about this $1 billion deal. Disney's going to invest in OpenAI or whatever, and then they're going to put AI slop out on Disney Plus. Nope. Disney's getting stock. That's what it is. OpenAI is not getting any money. Disney is licensing their characters to Sora so Sora can, I don't know, do whatever they're going to do with Mickey and Minnie Mouse. God, I'm sure it's going to be just fine. Oh, dear. Yeah, OpenAI gave Disney a bunch of stock. So OpenAI, the broke company, they're still broke. That's fun. Trump says he's strongly considering reclassifying pot via executive order. We thought we were going to get that executive order yesterday. We did not. Instead, we got strongly considering. Pot stocks did not like that. Pot stocks failed to light up for a second day on Monday, even after President Trump confirmed he's considering an executive order loosening regulations on Monday. The Amplify Seymour Cannabis ETF took a leg up in afternoon trading after Trump said he was weighing reclassifying the drug. Still, the fund was down nearly 7%, with investors taking profits following a surge of more than 50% on Friday. When asked Monday if he was looking at an executive order on rescheduling weed, Trump responded, "We are considering that." A lot of people want to see the reclassification because it leads to tremendous amounts of research that can't be done unless you reclassify. So we're looking at that very strongly. And we're not just looking at it. We are strongly looking at it. Someone wants to clarify what it means to look at something strongly. I'd sure love to hear that, but I digress. Trump's comments come after reports on Friday said the president was thinking about instructing federal agencies to reclassify marijuana as a less regulated Schedule 3 drug from a Schedule 1 substance. A person familiar with the matter told CNBC an order from the White House could come as soon as Monday. Well, it's Tuesday and we didn't get it yet, and the pot stocks didn't like that. Instead, we got strongly looking at. So right now, take a name like Tilray. It was down 3.8% pre-market. Let's just look at like a, say, a one-month chart of this. All right, big jump up late last week. Big red candle back down, gave up some of those gains yesterday. We're set to open further lower this morning. Now we're kind of unchanged here. So look, the pot stocks had a really good day on Friday, gave back some of those gains, didn't quite get the legislative or the policy move they were expecting. Doesn't mean it's not coming. It just means you got to wait a little longer. Meanwhile, somebody tell me just what the heck this story means. All right, Mish and I were looking at this story going back and forth for quite a while this morning, trying to figure out what the hell they're doing. I'll give you my best interpretation here. India's RBI, that's the Reserve Bank of India, their Fed, adds $5 billion via currency swap to boost liquidity. India's central bank injected $5 billion through a foreign exchange swap auction, deploying the tool for the first time since March as signs of liquidity strain emerge among lenders. The operation is part of the Reserve Bank of India's plan to add $16 billion of liquidity into the banking system this month in a buy-sell swap. The RBI purchases dollars from banks against rupees and agrees to sell them back at a future date, injecting rupee cash up front. All right, so far we're at $16 billion or $5 billion of liquidity added. So they're injecting rupees and they're buying dollars. So that would technically mean they're propping up the dollar with this. It's a repurchase agreement, so it's, you know, it should be neutral by the time this unwinds in a few days. But for now, they're injecting rupees. But wait, there's more. The RBI swap operations and bond purchases are expected to offset the cash drain from its dollar sales as it works to stabilize a weakening rupee, Asia's worst performing currency this year. The measures also aim to cap market interest rates and support an economy grappling with punitive U.S. tariffs. All right, so in the last paragraph, we were injecting rupees and using those to buy dollars. And the reason we have to do this is because we're buying so many dollars with the other hand that we're running short of rupees. So what's the net here? We've got these operations. We're trying to prop up the rupee because it sucks. And so we're using rupees to buy dollars. That's causing a shortage of rupees. So quick, print more rupees and use those to borrow dollars. What the hell are they doing? Maybe, just maybe, I'm going to throw it out there. Maybe you want to just take your fingers off the scale and let the market figure out where it wants to go on its own and then adapt accordingly instead of manipulating. And then when your manipulation overcompensates, you manipulate to offset your manipulation. And what's the net effect of that? Look at the rupee. 90.9 rupees to the dollar. A year ago, we were about, let's say the mid-December last year. A year ago, it was about 84 rupees to the dollar. And let's zoom way out. Look at what the rupee has done. Let's go to a weekly chart. Look at what the rupee has done since 1973. It's almost like no matter what happens, the Keynesians are always going to do the same thing. They're always going to debase your currency. Now, keep in mind, guys, this is the rupee as valued against the dollar. Keep in mind how much value the dollar has lost along the whole time. And you wonder why I'm so cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs when it comes to gold and silver. No matter what, they're just going to print. All right. It just wouldn't be a morning show if we didn't talk about private credit and private equity and all these shadow banking things and all the cockamamie stuff they're doing in the financial system. Shadow banks crossed $250 trillion with a T. There's Dr. Evil with his pinky. The $250 trillion mark as Watchdog warns on data. Oh, okay. Now that it's $250 trillion, now you want to warn. Okay, way to get out in front of that one, Carl. Global assets in the sprawling shadow banking sector have crossed the $250 trillion mark for the first time. New data from the Financial Stability Board shows fueling fears of mounting systemic risks from less regulated corners of the financial sector. The FSB's annual Global Financial Monitor shows non-bank financial institutions, or shadow banks, a group that spans hedge funds, insurers, investment funds, and others, had a record $256.8 trillion of assets at the end of 2024, up 9.4% year on year. The group now accounts for 51% of total financial assets, similar to its pre-pandemic share. The FSB lamented the lack of data around the growth of the multi-trillion dollar private credit industry, an area that regulators are keenly scrutinizing for signs of weakness amid warnings of vulnerabilities from bank bosses, including JP Morgan Chase head Jamie Dimon and UBS chair Colm Kelleher. And don't you just hate it when the Financial Stability Board laments that can't be good for you and I. Officials said they attempted to compile information on eight major jurisdictions, Canada, Germany, Italy, Luxembourg, and the Netherlands, Japan, Switzerland, and Hong Kong, but found significant gaps in the data available. Those jurisdictions reported just a half a trillion of private credit activity, which the FSB said was much lower than other estimates calculated with commercial data. In other words, they can't even see what they're doing. It's invisible. Oh, that's just great. That's gonna end so well. The report said not all participating jurisdictions were able to provide the data. They can't even see it. Some only provided data on part of the industry, such as by only collecting information on private credit funds and not on lending by insurers, which is the same thing. The FSB staff also noted the absence of a standard global definition for private credit and finance, which rendered it difficult to identify private credit entities in statistical and regulatory reports. The FSB's 2026 work program includes addressing data gaps in private credit. So they're hiding behind definitions. There's no clear regulatory definition of what private credit even means. And so they can't even measure it. They can't even tell how big the problem is. But don't worry, it's somewhere around $250 trillion. What's the worst thing that could happen? Meanwhile, German insurers hold $108 billion of illiquid debt pile. EIOPA says, what's that acronym stand for? EIOPA. German insurers are the most exposed in Europe to illiquid corporate bonds, a top watchdog said in one of the most detailed reports to date on the industry's investments in private credit. And again, when you guys hear illiquid, all right, what is illiquid means? Hard to sell. You can't sell it, which means the price probably isn't what you think it is. All right. Maybe you own a Beanie Baby you bought for $100,000 in 1998. All right. That is an illiquid asset. You're going to have a hard time selling it today, and you're probably not going to get $100,000 for it. At 91.8 billion euros or $108 billion, more than 40% of German insurers' bond holdings were in unlisted notes at the end of last year, the European Insurance and Occupational Pensions Authority said on Monday in Frankfurt. There's that EIOPA acronym there. Excluding index or unit-linked investments, European insurers held about 1.2 trillion euros of corporate bonds, of which about 13% were illiquid or unlisted. Insurers could face substantial losses if they have to sell such assets below book value in a downturn. The exposure is notable because Germany was already a flashpoint in the global commercial real estate meltdown over the last 2 years, with private debt featuring prominently. Insurers there faced billions of euros in losses from the collapse of a series of developers, including René Banco's Signa conglomerate, and more pension funds have since flagged further hits from risky bets. Why is it always the pension funds that take the hit? It's the preferred dumping ground of all of these Wall Street muckety-mucks, both here and across the pond. But don't worry, you know, German insurance companies, 40% of their assets held in these, or 40% of their bond holdings in these illiquid notes that they couldn't possibly sell for what they think they're worth. That's going to be just great for the average person when that goes. Hey, I just want to say thank you very much to Big Mouth Barry. Says, Jack, I'm worried about you. With Carvana joining the S&P 500 Monday, you're going to be okay. Don't worry about me. Worry about the people holding SPY or SPX or any of those acronyms. Carvana is an absolute chop shop. All right. Anybody who's even thinking about buying Carvana, you better read an awful lot about a company called DriveTime, who owns it and what DriveTime does. All right. DriveTime is being used to hide all of Carvana's bad business. All right. And just like Enron, who hid all of their losses in these special purpose vehicles off their balance sheet, kind of like Nvidia when they created CoreWeave. All right. It's going to blow one day. I am not very good at telling you what day it's going to blow on, but I can guarantee you it will blow one day. Ernie Garcia will be in handcuffs someday. Maybe the stock goes higher before that happens. And if it does and you own it, congratulations. Just know you're holding a bomb and you're sitting there dancing saying it ain't going to blow up while I'm holding it. Is that really where you want to be? That is ownership of Carvana stock right now. Thank you, Big Mouth Barry, for supporting the channel, sir. I'll be just fine. Don't worry. I don't own any Carvana. Hey, Grandpa, thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Keynesian economic theory allows politicians to enrich themselves and their donors. Yes, it does, because that's what monetary debasement does. Monetary debasement enriches the people closest to the money printer. The Cantillon effect, right? Those closest to the money printer see the benefits first. And who's closer to the money printer than politicians and their donors? So they see the benefits first. The last one to see the benefits is the wage earner. Oh, hey, you notice all the people working multiple jobs? What was it, it was 499,000 more people had to get second jobs because they're too far from the money printer to see any of the benefits. Abso-freaking-lutely, Grandpa. Thank you very much, sir, for supporting the channel. Hey, maybe we want to start teaching Austrian economics in schools. Now, you know what? Let's just keep rolling Paul Krugman's off the assembly line and just hope for the best. Why not? That's what the world needs, another few thousand Paul Krugmans a year. Thank you, Grandpa. Thank you, Jeffrey Lee, also for sending the super sticker. Appreciate that very much. For whatever reason, the super stickers don't quite show up on StreamYard when I put them on the screen. Hey, StreamYard, you want to fix that? That'd be nice. But thank you, Jeffrey. I appreciate the support of the channel, sir, very much. Hey, Bob89 says, Michael Lewis, here's Jackie. Love the shiny. I like the shiny too. Michael Lewis, that's Michael Lewis of Big Short Persuasion. Sure, why not? A little bit of foreshadowing there, maybe. Just, I don't know. I'm a big fan of Mr. Lewis's writing, though. Thank you very much, Bob, for being a Melonhead member for a month, sir. Appreciate that. T.A. Chapman says, holy shnikes, that Tiger King story. Did you also send that out to minor and major news outlets? Gonna send it out and share it. Amazing work. Brilliant, even. I hope that town gets some justice and relief. FFS. Thank you very much, T.A. Chapman, for supporting that. I have sent it to a couple of people. I've talked to a couple other podcasters about it. There's one guy who does a lot of similar work up in Maine with the Chinese triads. I sent it to him. I did see a lot of people tagging local media, state media in Oklahoma on that story. So I'm hoping some of them pick it up because I think that town needs help. I can tell you I was pleasantly surprised. I was really worried while I was making that video that nobody was going to care about it, that the video was just going to fizzle out, that it would be a waste of time. But I made it anyway because I thought it was important to make that. It took a lot of time to put that one in. But you know what? I'm glad it turns out more people did care. It did get a good reception. So now the question is, does the media care about it? Do the state and local people, maybe even the national people, does anybody care about flyover country enough to draw attention to what's happening in this town to get the government alphabet soup off their ass and start prosecuting these a-holes that are bleeding this and other towns nearby dry while, in my opinion, poisoning middle America? I hope so. Thank you, T.A. Chapman, for supporting the channel and for the kind words, sir. Mr. Four P's, he says, amazing work, Jack. Whoever didn't like and share the documentary, meet me in the metaverse. You've been called out. It's going down. Keep on keeping on. Thank you, Four P's. Party at Jack's beachfront condominium in the metaverse. Sure, why not? I don't own a beachfront condo in the metaverse. Sarcasm detector. All right, make sure that thing's calibrated. Thank you, Four P's. Appreciate the kind words, sir. Good luck in your metaverse fight. KDM28, thank you, sir, says, CDL mills are likely funded with tax-funded job training grants, too. Burn that money. Guys, if you don't know what a CDL mill is, I highly recommend that interview I did with Craig Fuller, the CEO of FreightWaves, yesterday, talking about the compliance crackdown in commercial trucking. And we saw that reflected in the jobs report today with that loss in transports. You can also see it. Honestly, I think it's sending a false signal right now. The Dow transports are up about 10% year to date. And typically a rally in the transport stocks predicts a bull market and an economic boom. But right now, I think the reason why the Dow transports are rallying is because trucking rates are on the rise because they're cracking down on all of these basically illegal driver's licenses that have been issued by these CDL mills. And because of all these non-domiciled CDLs are going away, there's now less capacity. And so the rate to ship things is going up and it's driving some of those trucking stocks higher. I think it's sending a false economic signal to the rest of the market Check out that video that I did with Craig Fuller. He is very excited for the trucking companies, though. He says what's coming is really good for the truckers, the ones who are doing it right. Thank you very much, KDM. Appreciate that one, sir. SWFLBOK says, is Trump using taxpayer dollars for Bitcoin? Not that I'm aware of right now. Now, we do have the strategic Bitcoin reserve, but that is not made up of government buying Bitcoin. That's made up of, like, say there's a bust and they seize somebody's Bitcoin wallet. The government seizes his assets. They tell the guy, hey, in exchange for a lighter sentence, turn over your private keys so we can seize your Bitcoin. The government is accumulating that. That's not them paying taxpayer dollars for it. So we haven't quite reached that ridiculous of a stage of printing money to buy Bitcoin. Thank God we haven't gone that far. But the government is a big holder of Bitcoin now. And because of the executive order establishing the strategic Bitcoin reserve, as it is seized from criminal enterprises, it will accumulate at the government. But no taxpayer money for it yet. He is trying to use taxpayer money to blow into that AI bubble, though. He's trying. It ain't going to work. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Hunt and Cover, thank you very much for the generosity, sir. I appreciate that very much. He says, here's some Hunt bucks to help offset the coming inflation. Get some coffee for you and Gigi. Mr. Hunt, I sure appreciate the wake-up juice, sir. Thank you very much. And yes, to offset the coming inflation, I may spend it on coffee. I may spend it on shiny. Although, you know, a couple of years ago, that had been announced. It ain't announced anymore, is it? Man, gotta love what's going on with this stuff, don't you? Thank you very much, Hunt and Cover, for supporting the channel. I appreciate that. Bro Joe's Cafe says 1964 minimum wage $1 to $1.25. A quarter had 90% silver. To have the same buying power now, minimum wage would need to be $40 to $50. Let that sink in. You know what? Let's do that math, shall we? Because the quick math, right? $1.25, the minimum wage in 1964, 90% silver. To go from face value to ounces of silver, you multiply by 0.714 on average. That means that 1964 minimum wage was about 0.8925 ounces of silver based on today's spot price of silver, which is, we'll go by spot, 6374. So times 63.74. Minimum wage in 1964 in today's silver price, $56.89. That's what minimum wage in 1964 is worth today. Now, let me ask you guys, because there's a lot of people, those Fight for 15 people that are out there, right? And all the people who are saying, do we need to raise the minimum wage or do we need to fix the money? Now, let me help you. It's the same thing. Fix the freaking money. And we can solve this stupid debate. $56.88. That is the silver value today of minimum wage in 1964. Can you imagine that? Can you freaking imagine? Thank you, Brojo, for supporting the channel. That math blows my mind every time. And of course, with the recent run-up in silver, it's just amazing. Hey, Nashville Pasta Man, power plants in space. That's how we're going to do it. Yeah, what is it Sam Altman said a few months ago? He said, maybe we should just build a giant Dyson sphere around the sun and use that to power a data center. Okay, a Dyson sphere. That's good. All right. Thank you, Isaac Asimov. The things these people have said, I cannot wait until after this bubble bursts and then somebody goes back and makes a montage of all the stupid shit Sam Altman and Jensen Huang and Elon and everybody said about AI, and then we just play it. And I don't know, maybe you could set it to like the Curb Your Enthusiasm song or the Benny Hill theme. Oh, it's going to be hilarious. It's going to be hilarious. Yes, power plants and data centers in space. Thank you, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel. T.A. Chapman's again says, realistic way that DeMartino Booth used to pull unemployment straight from the states. Much easier for a more realistic number. Under 5% now is BS, not realistic. I'd be surprised if under 10. Well, remember that what is it, U4 or U3 is the unemployment rate. That doesn't count a lot of people, right? If you've been unemployed for so long and you're no longer looking, you drop off. Like, you're not working. I mean, honestly, I think fewer than half the population is actually working right now. Half of the living population. We don't count children. We don't count retired people. We don't count people who have been unemployed for so long and didn't fill out a job application last month. We don't count people who drove an Uber for 1 hour and made $15. They're a job according to the unemployment rate. So there's a lot of ways that you can fake those numbers. I agree very much. And by the way, Danielle DiMartino Booth, I will go ahead and recommend her as well. She has some excellent commentary on the job market, as well as that birth-death adjustment. That's a big thing, too. That's another way the government can manipulate those job numbers higher, by manipulating that one. Thank you, TA, for the super chats and for the generosity. And, well, stick around, TA, because I got to thank you again for those 20 Nobody Special Finance memberships. Thank you so much, sir. I appreciate that. Hey, everybody, say thank you to T.A. Chapman if you got one of those memberships. And a reminder, you get a free Super Chat every month with that membership, so feel free to use that, and I will read and respond to your questions, as I'm about to do for Sharps Law, who says, bond vigilantes, 143 minus 143.78 shares, short 26% of the float. What are we talking about? What stock are we talking about here? 143.78 shares, 26% of the float. Those particular numbers in the case you're referring to here, I'm not sure. But I will tell you, since we're talking about bond vigilantes here, all right, you did give me a dotted line. Just because the Fed is cutting doesn't mean interest rates are going lower. All right, houses, cars, credit cards are all more determined by the long end of the yield curve, not the short end. And the bond vigilantes are still more in control of the long end than the Fed is. The Fed can decide to start printing money and manipulate the long end if they want to. Then they're going to send gold up in a straight line if they do that. But the bond vigilantes, if they decide that the Fed's actions and the government's actions means higher inflation, and they decide to start selling bonds because the interest rate is no longer going to keep up with the loss of the value of the currency, those interest rates are going to move higher. It doesn't matter what the Fed does with the overnight rate. So you're right to call out bond vigilantes there. Some of those numbers aren't jiving right away. I'm not really sure where you were going with that one, or the percent of the float. Maybe that's a GME reference. Not sure. But thank you very much, Sharps Law, for supporting the channel. Madison Hype says, how do I get closer to that money printer? That's a good question. I got to get me one of those, right? I don't know. Who's – do I have to never mind. Sorry. This is a family show. We're not going to go there, Madison. But yeah, get yourself a money printer, right? I'm going to write a success manual. It's going to be one page, and it's going to say, own a money printer and print the hell out of it. That's my one step for success, right? I'll sell that. I'll sell more shit than Grant Cardone with that. Yeah. Thanks, Madison. Appreciate the super chat and the support of the channel. Formula 19. There's Clippy. He says, do you see Wall Street stock market ever become heavily regulated and tightened up? Meaning it's a privilege now, and especially controlled if we see a CBDC, more for elites only in their own mind. I honestly could go either way on regulated, unregulated. Here's the problem, right? If you're going to deregulate, but then you're going to have the government backstop every time they do something wrong, then all the business case for deregulation goes up in smoke if you remove the consequences for reckless action. All right. So I'm generally in favor of deregulation as long as the taxpayers aren't on the hook for the major screw-ups in Wall Street. But the way we do things right now, the taxpayers are always on the hook for it. And so deregulation makes that worse, not better. And then unfortunately, when you regulate, more regulation, the regulations always favor the big players at the expense of the little players, like see also small banks. We've seen all of this consolidation in the banks because we came out with all these new compliance rules after the GFC because too big to fail was supposed to be too big to exist. But what was the net result of all of the regulations that we came up with after the GFC? We now have fewer banks and much bigger ones. So too big to fail is now even bigger. So all I can tell you is either have a free market or don't. We have the worst of both right now. We have deregulation and the implicit guarantee of the federal government. That's the worst of both worlds. We're doing it wrong. Thank you, Formula 19, for supporting the channel. Duke Dookie, the double D, says, hey, great Lindsay First Bank reporting. That's the First National Bank of Lindsay, Oklahoma. You are the best reporter in America. Take that, Bob Woodward, Walter Cronkite, and Paul Harvey. Plus, I'm buying physical silver. All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the kind words, sir, there. And I appreciate the nice things you said about that video. Again, guys, check out that video about Lindsay, Oklahoma in the feed if you haven't already. And share it, please. Get the word out about that story. Thank you, Double D. John Cook says, Trump's hiring 1,000 techies to move government assets to the blockchain. AI can't fail with government backing it. Winners will be Bitcoin, ETH, and Theta. I'm going to drop ETH. I'm going to drop Theta. I don't like any of the cryptos other than Bitcoin. I'm a Bitcoin purist when it comes to that. That being said, I still own some Bitcoin, but I sold a lot of Bitcoin a few months ago because I just looked at the calendar. I knew crypto winter was here. So long-term horizon, I'm still bullish Bitcoin. Short-term, I'm very bearish on Bitcoin. That being said, the whole thing, AI can't fail with the government backing it. All right, this ship can't sink. Famous last words. All right, President Trump can do things like appoint 1,000 people to help finance, and he can do his executive orders and hold them up and, you know, executive order to do a thing. If Congress doesn't allocate the money, it's not going to happen. So he's trying to use previously allocated funds to steer them into AI right now to keep the bubble inflated. It's not working, and it's not going to work. I don't think there's any stopping this bubble from bursting. The numbers just got too freaking big. They're just too big. Be careful, guys. This bubble is going. We're watching it pop in real time. Thank you, John Cook, for supporting the channel. VR Sim Racer says, just for saying Benny Hill theme. All right. Well, thank you very much. What do we got? Clippy is like of the Knights Templar there. That's pretty crazy. You know, Clippy's about to, about to storm the Holy Land or something there with the flag. Thank you, VR Sim Racer, for supporting the channel, sir. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melon Heads this morning. Appreciate all the generosity in the super chats. Thank you guys so much, as well as the kind words. Thank you also to my magnanimous Melon Heads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Links down below. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.